subscribe to Kentucky Crazies on iTunes. Find us on Facebook and at Kentucky Crazies on Twitter. You can call the Blue Phone at 859-780-CATS. That's 859-780-2287.
From the friendly confines of the KentuckyCrazies.com studios, located in the heart of the Big Blue Planet.
Listen up.
It's time to talk all things Kentucky Crazy.
Listen up.
Your hosts, Mike Hicks and Aaron Newton.
Listen up.
You people are crazy.
Okay, Kentucky Crazies, we got something exciting and different for you. I've got here to my left sitting with me, we have Tommy Stilwell, the blues guitar legend, sitting right here, and we're going to talk a little music, a little blues guitar, and we're also going to talk, of course, Kentucky basketball and all that good stuff. So, Tommy, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. Looking forward to the season, too.
Absolutely, yeah, we're getting close. So, for all of our listeners out there, I want to just start off with where you from, where'd you grow up?
Born and raised in Breckenridge County, Kentucky. Grew up in Cloverport, went to school there, graduated high school, whole childhood right there in that one little town.
Okay, so you are a blues guitar player. You play rock, you play jazz, you got all that kind of built in there. So when you were just a puppy, or just a kitten for this purpose, what were some of your, like, wait a minute, I like music. When were those moments for you when you were a kid?
Well, actually, it was pretty early on. Growing up in Kentucky and being from such a small school, the only sport that we could actually fully support was basketball to begin with. And I loved that, but I wasn't really very athletic. But music seemed to come naturally to me, and so I gravitated toward that. And growing up during my time, of course, you couldn't help be influenced by the British pop groups, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, but also the individual guitar work of like an Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix, guys like that shaped what I started out doing. And then that I kind of led a path backwards to the older American blues guys that had influenced them. The Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Albert King, Freddie King, all those guys. And it was just kind of a transition from that. Rock and roll and blues back in those days, there wasn't that much difference. I mean, you could turn on the radio and hear B.B. King singing, you know, right after you'd hear a Cream song.
I haven't seen you lately. Have you been hiding, playing games? Don't you want me anymore?
So what age were you when you first picked up a guitar?
8 years old when I first started actually playing chords and rhythms. I was actually a drummer at the time, playing in church meetings, tent revivals, that kind of thing. And I'd always travel with one of the ministers who played guitar, so there was always a guitar in the back seat with me. And I was about 8 years old coming back from church service, actually not far from here, up in Hancock County. And I just grabbed a guitar one night and started moving my fingers the way I'd seen the pastor during the service move his hands while I was playing drums. I'd be watching him and kind of just mimic that, and it started there.
Very cool. You know, you hear a lot about early musicians and their early influences. A lot of times it comes from church and that type of experience. So, you know, as you grew up, did you start playing in bands like at school dances, or what were some of the early gigs that you did?
Yeah, and you know, for anybody from this area, and you know as well as I do that, especially in Kentucky, you've got the small communities that the schools are so small, you're lucky if you have 15, 20 people in a graduating class. And, you know, it was one of those deals where my mom, in order to keep me off the streets and out of the pool hall, the only den of sin that she knew of in our town at the time, she actually helped get me all kinds of guitar equipment, a drum set, amplifiers, and actually had a building and behind her house where I could just go, even put gas heat in it, so I could go out there and just play drums or play guitar or whatever. And what happened, wound up happening, was I just recruited a couple buddies of mine from school and brought them down and showed them how to do this and how to do that on drums and how to do this and how to do that on bass guitar. And then I'd play guitar, and we started out as a little trio band. We weren't really that good, but we did manage to pick up a few gigs at the youth center and for the teachers on their at their Halloween party, stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, those are some good memories for sure, starting out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So as you've moved on, you've had quite a career to this point. Is there any particular, like, career accomplishments that have, you know, if you had, like, you don't have to give, you know, top five or anything, but, like, several things that maybe kind of stand out, like, wow, this is really cool, I'm doing this, or...
Yeah, you know, but, you know, there again, we're talking a 40-year career. Say any time that we played with the legends that I grew up admiring, you know, we toured with Johnny Winter some, had a standing set of shows every summer, every June with B.B. King. Those were high water marks for me because growing up I really admired those guys. Trips on the road where you might run into Buddy Miles, who played drums for Hendrix. You know, just to sit in the same room and talk and hear stories about those times and remembering that it being in a high school in a little town in Kentucky, you were thinking that's a big world out there, and that, you know, that's huge. And if I ever get to the point where I'm sitting around talking to Eric Burden from the Animals, it would probably mean that I would, you know, I'm on that level and you know, I've made it. And but you really don't feel that way once you're there and you're talking to guys like that, and you're like, wow, man, this is, it's not at all, because you're still struggling. Everybody, what we do is a job the same as any other job, and you still have your things to overcome. It never gets easy, and if it does, I think that's when people lose their sight of what their goals are and what they want to do in life.
So have you spent, like, just a great deal of time on the road throughout your 40-year span?
Oh, absolutely. I've been to practically every state in the Union. I've been over to in Asia, overseas, Mexico, Canada. And, you know, had the opportunity and been blessed to have worked with people there again in the industry when we did our first two Beat Daddy CDs from Alico Records. And we got to record Muscle Shoals. On our second CD, we worked with the Muscle Shoals Swampers, who are on just about every hit to come out of the South back when I was in high school. The guys with the Pointer, not the Pointer Sisters, but the Staple Singers, Bob Seger. I mean, you just name it. The list goes on and on. The guitar player, rhythm guitar player on our second album with the Beat Daddies, was the engineer and co-producer of the Rolling Stones' Brown Sugar, which was a huge hit when
wow.
I was in high school.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, you bring up the Beat Daddies. You guys are still playing out. What's kind of your current musical scene? You know, where do you have your hands in right now?
Well, there again, I do a lot of producing in my studio, and we're getting ready to release a CD on Jonas Cowan, a blues artist out of Evansville, Indiana. A lot of it's more of an Americana, it's an earthy release with a lot of resonator slide, finger picking type of thing. And he's another Kentucky boy, grew up in Clay, Kentucky, further west from here. And his dad was a minister in the church, and you know, it's that Kentucky tie-in. And if you live in and around the great state of Kentucky, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
KentuckyCrazies.com.
Call the Blue Phone at 859-780-CATS. That's 859-780-2287. Ask a question, leave a comment, or tell us how crazy you are about Kentucky. Leave us a cat call on the Blue Phone. We will put you on a future podcast.
KentuckyCrazies.com. Call right now.
Were you born bleeding blue, or how did that happen for you?
Yeah, and like I said, as a youngster growing up, I was a huge basketball fan. Had the gold on the rickety backboard in the backyard and the whole nine yards. Be out there with gloves on in the middle of winter, shoveling snow off the court. But I was just never that athletic. But you know, it didn't keep me from the love of the game and tuning in, you know, on the radio and K-Wood, and you know, those days were really something. And what's really funny is, though, you know, with the big rivalry between Kentucky and Louisville, that wasn't as present when I was a little guy. You actually rooted for the in-state team. As there were a couple times when, I don't know if you remember this or not, but back in the early 70s, Western had a couple nice teams and went to the NCAA, the Final Four one time, actually, I think.
Yeah, they actually have, I think, it still holds true to this day, they have more all-time wins than Louisville has historically. You know, of course, Louisville has a lot more Final Four success and all that, but, you know, Western's had a lot of really good programs.
Kentucky, you know, I would watch the sports on Wave TV, Channel 3 out of Louisville, as was our local station where I grew up. And they always gave the UK and the U of L scores. And, you know, you never really, I don't know what it was like on the other side, but I never really rooted for one to win and one to lose. I just wanted them all to win.
Right.
And I thought it was good for the state. But when it came right down to having to make a choice, yeah, I mean, being so close to Owensboro, I was a big Wesleyan fan. But if they ever played Kentucky, I mean, it was just a given. you had to lean Wildcats.
That's right. You know, it's funny because I graduated from Western. And whenever I speak of Kentucky, I usually say we. And whenever, like Anthony Davis year, whenever we played Western in the championship run, I graduated from Western and I called mm-hmm. them they. You know, so that's yeah. how much it's instilled, you know, from an early age, you know. And it's because Coach Cal says it, I think, pretty well when he says it's the Commonwealth team. And yes. I think that's what it boils down to, you know. So I like some of your stories there. You talked about the snow on the ground, the backboard, and, you know, K-Wood, there was a certain, I don't say romance to it because that sounds weird, but there was something about K-Wood on the radio when he was our eyes and our ears.
K-Wood had a way about him where it's not like he was calling a game. It was more like he was sitting there talking to you about the game, telling you, you know, how it's going. That type of thing, you know. It's like you turn on the radio and you invite him into the living room to describe the game to you.
And he was 100% honest about it, because I remember one of his phrases he would say, the Cats just playing poorly tonight, poorly. They're just playing yeah. poorly. Yeah. He wouldn't sugarcoat anything. And you could tell, you got a feel for the team just in the way he would describe the on-court action. And then he would also be, you know, that was a great call there against Kentucky. You know, he'd be honest about yeah. call. And then he'd also let you know when we got screwed by a call, too.
Oh, yeah. He was always, you know, he never held back. And it was always, you know, the honest take on what was happening. And the other thing that I don't know why, but it's just he was the first guy that I ever heard open a game with telling you that, you know, the Cats would be moving from the right to the left of your radio dial. You know, and that just gave you a mental image of the court on that radio. And I don't know, it's just something that always stuck with me.
I'm with you. And, you know, there was also that element, you know, I'd sit around with the family and listen to games. And then we got into the habit once, you know, when I was a kid, TV was not a big part of the games. You'd see maybe 5-6 games a year. When I was growing up, and we would try to get the radio synced with the TV because you didn't want to listen to the TV guys. You wanted to still listen to K-Wood, you yeah. know, and so that was a really special time that I almost kind of hate it that people nowadays won't ever kind of know what it was, where there was hardly no television and just K-Wood yeah. on the dial. It was really special.
It was a different time altogether because, you know, and Tom Leach does a fine job.
He's amazing, right? Yes.
I mean, you couldn't ask for anyone better to step in. But in general, that feeling that you would get even back during that same period when during the World Series, and when everybody you knew would be in class with that little earphone on their transistor radio, you know, listening to the game in the middle of the afternoon. You know, now everything's night, commercial, you know, prime time and everything. But yeah, I mean,
and you can check your cell phone in class to see the score now. Yeah, and, you know, and that kind of stuff.
The cool teachers would always roll a TV, a black and white TV, yes, in the classroom and watch the series. And you know,
yes,
and the same during the basketball tournaments, state tournament too.
Absolutely, yeah. It was the cool teachers. We had that in high school. You know, when March Madness would kick in, you know, Thursday morning games and Friday morning. You're in school, and we had those cool teachers that would have the TV on in a certain room, and all of us basketball junkies would roll in there,
yep,
when we could, and we tell each other the score, passing in the hallways. And
oh, and the Sweet 16 was something. You know, it was like that was a huge event going on. You know, like as big as the World Series to us.
Visit our online team shop at KentuckyCrazies.com. Use coupon code KYCrazies20 to receive 20% off your order. Exclusive t-shirts, officially licensed UK DVDs and Blu-rays, baby items for the little Wildcats, new stuff arriving all the time. Visit the team shop at KentuckyCrazies.com.
So, some of the great memories, any particular game that stands out to you in particular as far as... you know, a win, a loss.
I think the championship that always sticks out in my mind is the first one that you're actually around for, that you're really heavily invested in. And for me, that was 1978 with Phillips and Roby and Macy, James Lee, the baddest six man in town. You know, and just that whole thing in St. Louis was amazing. And I seem to recall, I didn't notice it at the time. I found out later that we actually won that on IU's court. There was some problem with the court there in St. Louis, and they had to ship one in from Assembly Hall and IU in Bloomington. And so, because I remember the state of Indiana being center court.
Yeah, you're right about that.
During the game.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's a strange anomaly there. We actually sell that full game on our website in the team shop.
Yeah.
And I watched that DVD not that long ago, and it's a very bizarre thing. And it's actually kind of awesome that we won a title with, you know, on Indiana's court.
Oh, yeah. And you
take that, Hoosiers.
Plus, you beat Duke.
Correct. You beat Duke on a court that has Indiana on it.
Yeah.
You can't write a better script than that.
No. Well, I mean, it was such an exciting time. You know, as a matter of fact, my second daughter was born 9 months later.
Wow. Okay. I wonder what happened the night of the celebration.
Yeah, she's a huge Kentucky fan, too, and she, bless her heart, she lives in Indianapolis with her family, so they're right in the middle of hostile country.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's something that I don't think I've ever heard anybody discuss. That's just a strange thing that right there was the state of Indiana, and it was the old school Indiana court, too, so take that, Bobby Knight.
Yeah.
So you mentioned some of the players on that 78 team. Do you have, like, any other certain players that you kind of hold near and dear to your big blue heart?
Well, you know, there's been so many moments down through the years, and, you know, there were a lot of disappointing times in the 80s. And there was so much potential. I mean, Kenny Walker, to me, to see him get the ball in the paint and seeming like he could just pogo stick up higher than anybody else and just look down at the goal and pop that little short, you know, jumper in, or, you know, get to the goal. It seems like he could jump out of the court. But, you know, it's just nothing ever really, you know, 84. I mean, when you're up by like 20 points in the Final Four, Bowie and Turpin and those guys, and it just for some reason didn't mesh, or, you know, you can't hit the ocean from the beach in second half.
I think it was like 13% or something like that in the second half
against
Georgetown. Yeah, that was a monumental hurt. That was a hurt because, you know, you got the title in 78, and we didn't really have a really special team again until that group was put together, and to miss out on that. You know, I was talking to somebody about this not that long ago where it's amazing. We have, like, the most storied tradition in college basketball history. UCLA has a couple few more titles, but they don't have the overwhelming numbers that we have. And think about how many close misses we've had where we could have, like, we could have doubled that if we just got lucky a few times.
Yeah. And it does take an amount of luck anytime you get, you know, that far into the tournament. Anything can happen. You know, single elimination, you lose, you go home. And that's a lot of pressure. I still to this day find it hard to look back on the 2015 team. that to me is like you get that far, and what a great season those guys had. And but I don't think you could ever put together a better team, top to bottom.
One thing I'm going to tell you, this team will never be together again.
You got 10 unbelievable players to play against, and you act like babies. It's incredible to me. Incredible.
Tonight is the first step on a journey that the Kentucky Wildcats hope will carry into next April in the Final Four.
Lobs from Poynter, slams it home!
Oh, they're on fire now! As Kentucky will move to 11-0.
My whole goal is by the end of the year that we're a world-class team. We're not there yet.
In a dominating performance.
Young fella, are you having a ball game?
We needed and will need close games.
Kentucky survives!
Are you getting some joy out of this, or are you just thinking, yeah?
Over to Cauley Stein. Dunks! Throws it behind his back. Cauley Stein! Flying two-handed slam dunk!
Unrivaled and undefeated through 31 games.
And I sat there and thought, wow, this team has accomplished something that was crazy.
Unbeaten champions of the Southeastern Conference, the University of Kentucky Wildcats.
It's never been like this in my 6 years here. All these good teams I've had, not been like this.
And the Cats stay perfect!
Enough talking, let's ball.
And you know what all those guys are going to be doing in the NBA, I feel like Devin Booker and Trey Lyles are going to have all-star careers in the NBA. And you know, you got Carl Anthony, yeah, of course everybody knows who was on that team, and you're right, to assemble that amount of talent and then just miss out and going perfect. Mm-hmm. That one, you know, my biggest heartbreaks, if I had to rank them, and not in any particular order, of course, the 92 game, everybody knows about that one. I brought this up on the last podcast, but for me personally, the Chuck Hayes 2005 missing the Final Four when he was a senior, mm-hmm. that hurt me bad because I loved Chuck.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I was ready for Tubby to get over that hump because everybody was starting to get a little restless, and I wanted it for Tubby because I love Tubby. And then you're right, the 2015... those were probably the three biggest hurts. Even though I remember the 84, we just couldn't hit a shot. But there was something about those other ones to me that just hurt me.
And, and for the longest time, I couldn't watch the replay at Florida of Nerlens going down. That.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. This year, we've got a whole new crop of young kittens coming in. And Bam Adebayo, get ready. You talk about Kenny Walker jumping over people.
Yeah.
I think Bam may plow through a few.
Well, up and through. I hear, yeah. You know, he can get up, you know, with the best of them. And he covers as much ground vertically as, you know, the 6'10", 7-footers. And he takes up a lot of space in the paint. I'm really looking forward to seeing him on the court and seeing what our backcourt can do with a front court like that.
This is what makes this Cal era so uniquely special and so, at times, uniquely frustrating because, you know, we have such a turnaround with players. But to go from Ulis and Murray, who just were phenomenal in the backcourt, and one season later, with them gone, saying we may have a better backcourt or at least equally as they're going to be very different, but they're going to be just as powerful. And you know, that's something that does not happen.
Yeah, I think the trademark this year might be a little, actually, hard as it may be to fathom, is speed. I think we're going to be quicker in transition with Monk and Fox and Briscoe. And the advanced practice reports I've heard is these guys get from one end of the court to the other. You know, like, I remember the John Wall, three dribbles and you're the length of the court.
Right.
Days. And I think we might be in for something like that. I wouldn't want to put any pressure on any of the new guys coming in to try to step into the shoes of you know, one of the fastest players we've had. But, you know, that's the reports I've been hearing. It's speed is going to be a lot of it. And I like a good transition team.
You know, Cal has a way of being swaggy Cal when he knows what he's got, getting ready to come, you know, put out on the court. And I think that's what he's doing right now. Any interview I've seen with him, we're getting the swaggy Cal. And, you know, we got, you know, some of the returning players with Willis and Briscoe. And then Humphreys, people forget how young he is. And all indications is that he's in a way better shape. He's, you know, trim, and he's getting up and down the court. So he's a guy that might see some more minutes than people may realize. But I think you're right. It's going to be speed, and it's going to be transition. And defensively, Cal thrives off defense because our offense comes from that in a lot of ways. Because, you know, you can't get in transition without a steal or a rebound, throw to half court kind of stuff. And with this athleticism that we have coming in, it's going to be a fun year again, for sure.
Coach says every year, you know, we've got the talent, we've got the ability. We just got to see how to play them, learn the team all over again. I mean, it's as challenging for him as it is anybody to learn the team and how we're going to play and get it figured out. I've heard him say a million times, we've got to figure it out. But he's always been very good at doing that.
He doesn't get enough credit for that, I don't believe. And whether you agree or disagree with the quote-unquote one and done, I don't think there's anybody that that gets the guys by February prepared for March better than him in that, you know, that one and done scenario. And I go back to whenever he first came here, he talked about John Wall specifically before the season started. He said, folks, don't record the early games because you're not going to want to watch them again. Because we're going to be throwing the basketball up in the third and fifth row. Yeah. And he was just, you know, but by February, March, then it's going to be a different team. And there is a method to his madness when it comes to getting them better.
Well, yeah, and something else maybe some people don't look at, that I think what Coach Cal does so well is he sees these guys and he knows what's in their future if they work hard and stay focused and do the things they need to do to develop into mature pro players who are going to be, you know, let's face it, they're going to be millionaires overnight eventually. And so I think he looks at the big picture and he tries to develop young men, young professionals who are going to handle that next step, because it's very easy to lose your way and go down the wrong path with all that money and all that fame and all that success thrust at you. And I think what happens is them being ready by March to do what they need to do on the court is a byproduct of him trying to prepare them for the next level in the NBA.
I couldn't have said that better myself. I agree 100% on that. If we want to find you online, if we want to hear your music, if we want to go see you play, tell us where we can find you online and even maybe some gigs coming up, where if we want to buy a CD, all of that.
Well, I perform with a band called The Beat Daddies. We've been around since 1986. You can find us on the internet at www.thebeatdaddies.com. We also have a Facebook presence. Just go to Facebook and search The Beat Daddies. I also have my own personal website, www.tommystillwell.com. Our schedules are always listed online on Bands in Town, so we're easy enough to find.
Okay, very cool. And any speculation on when that next release is going to be hitting?
No, I tell you what, Mike, we've got so many things going on right now with the studio and a change in the whole climate of our live engagements. It's just too much to say right now. I know our latest CD's been out there now for about a year, but it's just trying to get everything all together, we haven't really had time to work. And, you know, we've got new material being written, but just no time for production because of, conflicting schedules.
I understand that. So everybody out there listening, just go to those sites he mentioned, and they'll keep you posted up to date on the new release. And, of course, you can get any of the other releases that I've heard, and they're fantastic. We've been playing a few of those clips throughout the podcast here. So definitely give them a visit and give them a shout. Let them know that you heard him right here on KentuckyCrazy.com podcast. Tommy, thanks for coming in. It's been fun.
Thanks for having me.
And we could definitely talk basketball for another hour or so. But thanks, everybody, out there listening. And go Cats.
Go Cats.
Tell me that you love me. Said no one could take my place. And girl, I asked you where you've been. You couldn't look me in the face. Thank you.
next time. Stay crazy, Kentucky.
Follow us on Twitter at Kentucky Crazies. And find us on Facebook at facebook.com/KentuckyCrazies. KentuckyCrazies.com.
Listen up.
You people are crazy.
And this is all a part of my sickness.